Becatra Podcast Conversations for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Becatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're asking a pretty big question: who's actually running things these days?
Yeah, who's in charge? And the answer, well, according to Mark Bevier in his really important book, Governance, it's way more complicated than just saying the government.
Right. So our goal here is to give you, our listener, a new way to look at modern authority. We're unpacking Bevere's whole idea of governance.
Moving beyond that simple picture of, you know, a central state calling all the shots.
Exactly. Into the, let's say, the messier reality of networks and how decisions really get made.
And this isn't just academic stuff, is it?
No way. Think about the huge challenges we face: global supply chains breaking down, climate change, cybersecurity, pandemics.
All that stuff that just ignores borders. These massive tangled problems.
And you can't tackle those with the old top-down government approach, can you?
No, it just doesn't work. And that's exactly what Bevier is getting at. How do we even analyze ruling when power is so spread out?
When outcomes aren't just orders from the top, but come from like these complex interactions between state agencies, NGOs, companies, local groups.
Yeah, all these different players. How do you make sense of that?
Okay, so let's talk about the thinker behind this idea, Mark Bevier. He's a big name, distinguished professor of political science at UC Berkeley.
Right, but it's not just the title. What makes him stand out is his whole approach.
He's a key figure in what's called the interpretive turn in social science. What does that mean exactly?
Well, instead of looking for universal laws of politics, like, you know, physics for society.
Which sounds kind of tempting sometimes.
Yeah, maybe. But Bevier insists we have to understand politics by looking at meaning, human beliefs, intentions, how people understand their world.
Wait, so if I want to know why a certain policy passed, you're saying I shouldn't just look at the votes or the economic pressures, I should look at meaning.
That's the core of it. Think of it like this. Traditional political science might look at the architecture of a house, the structure, the rules, the floor plan.
Okay.
Bevier Scherer says, yeah, that's interesting, but you have to talk to the people living in the house. Why do they use this room this way? What do they believe the house is for? Why might they suddenly decide to knock down a wall, even if the blueprint says not to?
I get it. So it's about the subjective experience, the beliefs behind the actions, not just the structures.
Exactly. He takes philosophical ideas about meaning and applies them to real-world political puzzles, like how the modern state has changed so dramatically. He builds his theory from the ground up, starting with how people think and believe.
So he's pushing back against theories that say structures determine everything, or that everyone's just acting out of pure self-interest, like in rational choice theory.
Precisely. He wants a richer, more human-centered way to explain political life.
Okay, let's get into the book itself, Governance. You said it's partly a diagnosis.
Yeah, first it diagnoses this historical shift, how we moved from government, that centralized state model, to governance, this more decentralized networked reality.
And where does he trace the start of that shift?
He points back to the crises of the 1970s. You had stagflation, that nasty mix of stagnation and inflation oil shocks, a feeling that big government, the welfare state, was just bloated and inefficient.
Right, the whole government overload idea.
Exactly. And that created an opening, didn't it? For new ideas.
Like neoliberalism, Hayek, Thatcher, Reagan proposing less state intervention.
Yes, they offered a solution, shrink the state. And that led to what Bevier calls the hollowing out of the state. It's a powerful image.
Hollowing out. So the state didn't vanish, but its core functions got pushed elsewhere.
That's it. Some functions went upwards to international bodies like the EU or WTO. Some went downwards to local or regional authorities. And crucially, a lot went outwards.
Outwards.
To private companies through privatization, to nonprofits, NGOs, to market mechanisms. This whole movement called new public management, bringing business ideas into government.
So the state becomes less of a direct doer and more of a coordinator or a facilitator, steering rather than rowing, maybe.
Yeah, that's a common way to put it. But the key point for Bevier is, why does this hollowing out make the old theories kind of useless?
Okay, why?
Because those theories mostly assumed there was a central command post you could study the legislature, the main bureaucracy.
Right.
But if power is now scattered across all these different partnerships, private contracts, networks, looking only at the old center means you're missing most of the action.
You're looking in the wrong place.
Totally. And those theories often fail to account for human agency people making choices based on their beliefs in this messy new setup.
So the solution Bevier proposes is this interpretive decentered theory. focusing on practices shaped by what people actually believe and do.
Exactly.
Let's dig into that core difference then, government versus governance.
Okay, so government, that's the old model, right? Hierarchical, state-focused, formal authority. Think big government departments, clear lines of command.
The way we often still think it works.
Pretty much. But Bavery says that's largely history.
Mm-hmm.
Governance is the reality now. It's polycentric, many centers of power.
Networked, often informal, involving the state, but also all these non-state actors, companies, charities, community groups.
All trying to coordinate to solve problems, or sometimes just bumping into each other. It's that complex web think, local school partnerships, global climate action groups, privatized utilities.
And this isn't just a word game, is it? He's saying the fundamental nature of ruling has changed.
Absolutely. It requires a whole new toolkit to understand.
Okay, but let's push back a bit on his critiques. Why exactly do the old tools fail? Take institutionalism, the idea that rules and institutions shape behavior. Surely rules still matter.
Oh, rules definitely matter. Bavery isn't saying they don't. But he argues institutionalism puts too much emphasis on the rule itself, as if it has automatic power. He says people aren't just puppets following a script. They interpret the rules. They decide whether to follow them based on their own beliefs and understandings.
So, like, a new environmental law only really works if the key people involved believe it's legitimate or believe they'll get caught if they ignore it.
Precisely. If those beliefs shift, maybe they think the enforcers are weak or the rule is unfair, then the rule itself, the structure, can become pretty meaningless. People find ways around it.
The belief drives the behavior, not just the rule on paper.
Got it. What about his other main target, rational choice theory? The idea that people are just driven by self-interest. That feels pretty intuitive in politics sometimes.
It does, but Bever finds it too simplistic, too.
Hmm.
Thin. It assumes everyone, everywhere, is basically a walking spreadsheet, constantly calculating how to maximize their own utility.
Which ignores a lot of human motivation.
Exactly. It struggles to explain things like altruism or why people stick to certain traditions even when it's not obviously in their immediate self-interest.
Right.
Or why culture matters. Or even how our definition of self-interest might change based on our values or beliefs.
Right. Rational choice often can't explain why someone defines their interest in a particular way or why those interests might evolve. It misses the role of shared meanings and traditions.
Okay, so critiquing those clears the path for his own interpretive framework, this idea of power being decentered, spread out, no single control room.
Yes. And to understand how things change within this decentered world, he gives us this really useful model. You mentioned it earlier, tradition, dilemma, and agency, the TDA framework.
Right. So tradition is like our starting point, the background context.
Yeah, the inherited web of beliefs, practices, assumptions we grow up with or operate within. It's the water we swim in, often without noticing it.
Then a dilemma comes along, a new problem, a crisis, something that challenges that inherited tradition, makes us question things.
Exactly. It's the catalyst, the spark for potential change. The tradition isn't working anymore or it's being questioned.
And finally, agency. That's our ability as humans to think about that dilemma, reason through it, and maybe change our beliefs or practices in response.
Precisely. We draw on our traditions, but when faced with a dilemma, we use our agency to innovate, to formulate new beliefs, new ways of doing things. And those new beliefs can then, over time, become part of a new tradition.
It shows how history shapes us, but we also shape history through responding to problems.
It's a dynamic process.
Let's make this concrete. Use that new public management example again. How does TDA explain its rise?
Okay, so the dilemma was the crisis of the welfare state in the 70s and 80s perceived inefficiency, costliness. The old way wasn't working.
The tradition it challenged was the post-war belief in big state-run public services.
Right, and policymakers, drawing on a different tradition, that of New Right or neoliberal ideology, which emphasized market efficiency. Use their agency to reason that the solution wasn't just tweaking the old system, but fundamentally changing it. They formed new beliefs that competition, targets, and private sector methods were the answer.
So the shift happened because key people's beliefs about how to run public services changed in response to a problem, drawing on a particular ideology. It wasn't just an automatic economic adjustment.
That's Bivier's point. You have to understand the beliefs that drove the choices.
Okay, another example. Say, a local urban regeneration project, a partnership between developers, the city council, and maybe some community activists.
Right. Bevere would say you can't just look at the formal structure of the partnership, the meeting rules.
You have to look at the conflicting traditions and beliefs each group brings to the table.
Exactly. The developers might operate from a tradition emphasizing profit and quick results. The community groups from a tradition of social justice or neighborhood preservation. The city officials might be trying to balance economic growth beliefs with political accountability beliefs.
And the outcome, what actually gets built, who benefits, emerges from the clash and negotiation between those different belief systems. It's not predetermined by the structure.
That's the idea. It's shaped by how those actors, using their agency, interpret the situation and argue for their beliefs within that specific context.
That really does change how you'd analyze something like that. Okay, let's pull out some key themes from all this. What are the big takeaways for us?
I think the first, and maybe the biggest, is the primacy of belief and meaning. His whole argument rests on this.
That actions are expressions of understanding. To get why something happened, you need to see the world through the eyes of the people who did it.
Right. You have to ask, what meaning did they attach to the situation? What did they believe they were doing, and why?
So if you're trying to understand a decision at work or in your local community group, maybe stop just asking what rule or structure caused it.
And start asking, what did the decision makers believe about the problem? What story were they telling themselves?
Okay, theme two.
Decentered theory. Power is fluid, it's negotiated, it's spread out. Get rid of the idea of a single puppet master pulling the strings.
Because there isn't one.
In most complex situations, no. Social order, Bevy argues, is actually quite fragile. It's constantly being made and remade through the interactions of all these different agents with their own beliefs and goals.
That feels very relevant for things like climate change policy or healthcare reform. No single government department, no single international body controls everything.
Exactly. Success depends on understanding that whole network, navigating the different beliefs within it, not just lobbying the person formerly in charge.
And the third theme sounds a bit challenging. The normative challenge to democracy, the democratic deficit idea.
Yeah, this is a really important consequence. If real power, the power to get things done, to coordinate action, increasingly lies in these complex, often opaque networks.
Like public-private partnerships or international committees or private regulators.
Then traditional democratic accountability, mainly through elections, starts to look pretty weak, doesn't it?
Because we vote for the government, but we don't directly vote for the CEO of the company running the privatized service or the members of the international standard-setting body.
Exactly. Their decisions affect us deeply, but the lines of accountability are blurred or maybe even broken.
So what's the implication? Give up on democracy?
No, not at all. But it forces us, Bevere suggests, to think about democracy differently, maybe less about just voting every few years.
And more about ongoing participation, contesting power, and demanding accountability within these various networks, not just directed at the formal state.
That seems to be the direction it pushes us, reimagining democracy for a networked world.
Okay. Bevere's writing can be dense, but you mentioned he has some really punchy statements that sum things up.
He does. They really crystallize the core ideas. For instance, on the changing role of the state.
He says governance is not about control, but about coordination and collaboration.
Right. That captures the shift perfectly. The primary job isn't issuing commands anymore. It's facilitating, connecting, building agreement among diverse players.
And his challenge to mainstream political science.
It's pretty direct. To explain governance, we must move away from abstract theories of structures and rational actors and instead begin with the beliefs people hold.
That's the interpretive method right there. Start with meaning.
Absolutely. And on the nature of power itself. Power in the modern world is decentered. There is no single command center.
Challenges our basic intuition that someone must be in charge somewhere.
It does. And finally, wrapping up his theory of change, the TDA idea.
Social change is not driven by external forces, but by human agency. It occurs when individuals, guided by their traditions, confront dilemmas that force them to innovate.
Change comes from us, from humans reasoning and creating new beliefs in response to challenges, always starting from the context of our inherited traditions. It's a creative, interpretive process.
Okay, this is fascinating theoretically, but how can we apply this?
Yeah.
For, say, citizens or activists?
Well, one big takeaway is, you need to map power accurately. Don't just focus on the obvious targets, like your elected officials.
Look deeper. Look at who's really influencing decisions in that specific policy area.
Yes. Is it a corporate board, an international committee, a local partnership board dominated by certain interests. Find the real nodes of power in the network if you want to have leverage.
And what about for people working inside the system? Policymakers, professionals.
Baver's work suggests the need to embrace humility. You can't just impose policies from the top down and expect them to work perfectly in a complex network.
Because you don't have full control.
Right. Your role often shifts towards being a meta-governor, more about facilitating dialogue, mediating between groups with conflicting beliefs, building trust, setting broad goals rather than micromanaging.
Less directive, more orchestrator.
Something like that. And for everyone, activists and policymakers alike.
Since beliefs are central.
Focus on the power of narratives. How are problems being framed? What stories are being told about solutions? Real change often happens when someone successfully introduces a new dilemma or reframes an old one.
Persuading people to see the situation or their own traditions in a new light, to adopt a new belief.
Exactly. If you can change the dominant story, you can often change the policy that follows. Beliefs drive action.
Okay, final thoughts. What really struck you or surprised you most about Bevier's work?
For me, it's how fundamentally human it makes politics seem. The idea that the world is run not just by structures or money, but by these complex, shifting webs of belief.
The stories we tell ourselves about power and policy.
Yeah. It makes politics feel messier, maybe more unpredictable, sure, but also more dynamic. It suggests real change is possible because beliefs can change.
What I found really compelling was that balance he strikes. He doesn't ignore the past tradition really matters. It constrains us.
But he doesn't make it deterministic.
No. He gives agency our ability to reason and create the central role when we face new dilemmas. It feels like a really sophisticated way to understand how history moves, how societies evolve.
It avoids simple answers.
Definitely. It gives us a powerful, coherent way to try and make sense of the apparent chaos of our interconnected, globalized world. It helps see the patterns within the networks.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.